out, boys and girls. Welcome back. Thank you for coming on. It's great to have you here. My name is Henrik. This is Red Ice TV. And, of course, if you're joining us in the radio archive, I guess we will call this Red Ice Radio. But as you know, we have been doing more and more video lately, so we have both versions available for you, both the video and the audio. Today, we have Hans Johansson with us on the show. He's from the party in Norway called Alliansen, or the Alliance. I recently just came across his work and wanted to bring him on to talk about his political missions in Norway, how things generally are there and stuff like that. We have a lot to talk about, so welcome to the show, Hans. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Henrik. Great to be on your show.
Excellent. So tell us a bit about the party first, and for those who don't know, how long you've been involved in this?
Well, the party of the Alliance, Alliansen in Norway, is really a political innovation. We do things very differently, and we are a platform for free speech and a people's movement for that as much as we are a political party. And I think we have some insights and maybe some tips for other people that want to get involved politically in other countries.
Yeah, we have a lot to get into here. So how long has Alliansen, the Alliance, been in operation?
We formed the Alliance in November last year in 2016, so it's a very new, it's the newest political party in Norway, and it's also the party that's been formed the fastest in Norway that I know of. And the thing was that I was probably the most prominent Donald Trump supporter in the Donald Trump campaign last year. I was pretty much the only one. And when Donald Trump won, to most of their surprise, I had a unique position. I needed to do something with that position, and we started the party.
Oh, interesting. So it's out of that. That's interesting. So what was the general, I mean, I know some of the articles and polls and things like that from Sweden when it came to Donald Trump and their, you know, the trust levels. I saw these, surveys that were done and stuff like that. It was just, I mean, it was just outrageous in terms of how nutty the Swedes looked at that point. Was it the same in Norway?
Absolutely. Everyone thought that Hillary, everyone knew that Hillary would win. So they had prepared even, you know, mock-up things where I would be needed to be like defeated, and they would mock me even before the election. So it was fabulous to be on the winning side, and I got a tremendous amount of media attention in Norway on the day after the election because they didn't have anyone else to turn to, really. I was pretty much the only one who had gone out publicly in support of the Trump candidacy.
Interesting. So tell us a bit about the kind of the makeup of the party, what some of the important points are to you, what are some of the questions and issues that you feel most passionate about and that you want to push?
Well, the thing with the party is that we do not have a party program. All the candidates in the party are completely freed to do their own thing, to run on their own issues. And this kind of resembles the direct election of individuals that we had in the past in Norway, also other countries. Today, the situation is that the political parties have sort of taken over the political processes, so the individual alone has no chance to get a career in politics without going into the political parties themselves. So we have set it up so there are no party program that they need to adhere to. They're at liberty to do their own thing. And me, as the party leader, the only thing I do is to elect who will be on our lists. So that is my role as the party leader. And I'm the only member of the party. Some people call this the Geert Wilders model from Holland. It's not exactly the same setup, but it's similar in the way that there's one guy, the party leader, that has all the formal structures gathered on one person, and then that person just appoints the other people to be on the list. But I'm no, you know, I cannot dictate what the other people will then say because they are at liberty. But I do choose the people that I do believe are the ones that are outspoken, honest, and really has the kind of integrity to say things as they are.
So obviously then you would go out and look for people that are on the page of the issues that you're concerned with, correct? I mean, that's your position.
Yes, and the things that we are concerned with is really to be outspoken and honest and frank. So we are looking for the kind of individuals that are already doing that in some capacity. They either have a blog or they're a YouTuber or they're maybe in the media as a writer. and then we put them together. So all the people that we have on our lists are somewhat controversial because they're already sort of attacking the establishment and pointing out certain things.
So what are some of the issues that you personally are involved in and feel that those are important? I mean, we have, of course, a very similar situation. I think much worse, of course, in Sweden, but it's a very anti-nationalistic, political system. It's very interested in putting the native population to the side. It's very interested in opening the borders. It's very, very liberal. Feminism, free speech has become a very important issue to us and stuff like this. Immigration. Where are you on this page? Where do you want to take the party on some of these questions?
Well, in some sense, I am just one of the candidates in the party, no more, no less. So I have my issues, just like the other candidates have the issues that they want to push in their candidacies. For me, of course, a lot of my focus is on the mass immigration and all the problems around that, and Islam coming in to Europe and Norway, and to find solutions to fight back on this. That's really one of the most important things. But also, I think that for me, more and more as the party leader, my role is more and more the structure itself, what we have set up as a new kind of political innovation, really, and how we're doing it. So my issues are important, but maybe more important is holding the party together and making sure that the other candidates are able to push on their issues. And some of our candidates are quite radical. There's one candidate who wants to really, to make Islam illegal in Norway even. I'm not sure I agree with him on that, but I think it's fabulous that we have a candidate that can say that. So this can be discussed as a possible solution to the problems we're facing.
Interesting. Yeah. So what's your sense of that this is realistic within the current framework of how Norway's is dictated and run? I mean, I feel for me personally, a lot of the issues that we raise, no matter how, to me personally, sensible they are, how balanced they are, how toned down to a certain extent, and of course the reason you do that is to begin to initiate some kind of level of progress with people. You try to get them to a certain point where they understand your position and stuff like that, and then you can move from there into other issues. But it's been very difficult to even gain a little bit of ground in Swedish politics. Is it the same in Norway?
Absolutely. It's very difficult. But I think also the innovation that we do is that we are really a party that's set up in order to talk about these things, to address these things, to be a kind of enfant terrible, a terrible child in the era of politics. Because we don't have an ambition with this party to form the next government or to even be part of the next government. We want to have those radical voices, those voices that are pointing out that the emperor is naked. We want to give them a stage to say that, because we believe that is a kind of needed catalyst. We need to broaden the spectrum of what is possible to say and talk about, so that this corridor that we have today of what's acceptable, that is just blown up wide open.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems to be the biggest issue. I mean, it's like it's just this system that's so, I think that word is the best that we say in Sweden, opinion corridor, and it's getting tighter and tighter and tighter, right? And the job for people like us is to completely blow this open. At the same time, of course, you can't immediately go overboard on certain issues because you realize that they will just kind of, you know, discredit you. But it feels that with everything that's happened lately with the, migrant crisis, with a lot of the terrorism in Europe, and of course it was in Sweden not too long ago now, it might just be a matter of time before it comes to Norway. People are obviously looking at these positions and realizing, you know what, maybe there's something to it, because this is obviously not working, right? I mean, obviously something is wrong here. We can't just import the rest of the world, have no checks in on the borders, and then expect everything to be nice and dandy. ISIS is a huge problem in Sweden now. And I can imagine that even people in Norway must look at Sweden and say, you know, these people are crazy. What are they doing? Even the loose border between Sweden and Norway is going to potentially even put Norway in danger, right?
Yes. And the innovation that we have done is really to just let people, our candidates, form the questions and their solutions in their own way. And this is really important because some people have worked on this for a long time and found ways to talk about this very difficult issues in a way that works for them, with their arguments, with their way of framing the issue and framing the solutions. And I think it's so important to let those people who have carefully crafted a way to talk about these difficult issues, to let them talk about it in that way that they have crafted. A lot of other initiatives that I see try to put everyone into the same platform, so everyone needs to talk about it in the same way. And what we do differently is that we just allow the candidates to talk about it in their way, because these are very difficult issues, and we need to frame it and attack it in different ways. And I feel it's so important to allow people to do that without tying them down to a political program.
All right. Well, that's interesting. So what's the plan in terms of like the next strategy and what you guys are aiming at? Is there any milestones or goals that you guys have set up and that you're going to try to reach? Is it just to, I mean, I get the point that it's mostly about being then a party that raises the issues to get attention around and to get the debate going, to get people talking about it. It's not maybe more important for you guys to start by winning seats or whatever. But usually what people have noticed, though, is that when you do start a party, even though if they're successful or not, they do manage to get mainstream coverage, and hence you kind of force media to discuss and talk about it, right?
Exactly. And that we are, I already considered Alliansen, the Alliance, a huge success. We've come to the political stage, we get attention. I've been on TV, you know, numerous times, and the election has just started, the campaign. The actual election will be on September 11. So it's a fantastic way to get me and the candidates out there. And the candidates are super happy that the way that they have now been given a platform to really come out with what they've been doing for a very long time, but now have this leverage of a political party to get that voice out. And we have numerous wins already. We've been able to push the conservative parties to the right, absolutely. We see now that they are being defensive because we have come up on their right side. And we have one really huge win so far with the Progress Party, one of the governing parties in Norway, who has decided to go for a ban on circumcision of boys in Norway. Hmm. And we were absolutely instrumental in making that happen, something that has opened a Pandora's box of all kinds of issues that have come out of that.
Interesting. You know, obviously, I've always been very much against circumcision, and Scandinavian society in general have actually been very instrumental in getting other countries to look at this stuff as well. You know, they've been in a position where we've said, you know, this is dangerous. They can get diseases. There's, of course, no wrong with how people are born as the gods intended us to be. There's no problem with it, right? And I'm glad that Scandinavian society has pushed this, if you will, and managed to have some success. I think even in America, some of the anti-genital mutilation campaigns that have been run has referenced, you know, the Nordic countries as one of those. But this is, of course, dovetails with the issue of the fact that we have massive amounts of immigration into our country, so that this have now become a practice that's on the agenda, so to speak, because it hasn't been before, right?
Absolutely. We have a huge immigration from Muslim countries where they practice now circumcision of boys in Norway. This has been a very, very marginal issue in Norway in the past, but it's now become an issue that really needs to be dealt with. So the Progress Party was very brave, actually not the leaders of the Progress Party, but the members, the grassroots members of the Progress Party really pushed this decision on the party at the leaders. They did not want this, but the grassroots was able to vote for that anyway. So it's a very interesting dynamic around this. It shows all kinds of interesting conflicts that have arisen and that's been lying underneath for a long time.
Okay, interesting. So some of the other things, let's get into this. Obviously, some of the stuff that's on the agenda is, of course, to re-emphasize Norwegian nationalism and get people proud in their nation again to get a, I know that you're personally interested in history and these kinds of things, and I do believe it's an important thing to kind of lift forward. But, you know, in terms of, so people kind of get an idea of who you are and some of the issues that you're pushing, you're well into some of the meme wars and stuff. You have a finger on the pulse, so to speak, with some of the rising counterculture within it. Has any of that, like the, has that been beneficial in helping to get the word out? Because I don't know much about that situation. If like the media in Norway are looking at some of the stuff that you guys are doing and kind of, are they getting any of that, or is it just, are they attacking you for you know, having these kinds of memes and stuff like that, or what's going on that front?
I don't think they understand it, and we are the only party in Norway that's really using meme magic to our advantage. And the fantastic thing is, I mean, I'm 45, okay, so I'm not that young anymore, but all the kids that are doing the memeing stuff and that are looking at YouTube stuff and all that, they're all coming to us. It's amazing. So the alliance, the strongest part of the electorate that we are reaching out to is that young people from maybe 16 up to 28, 30. And they're all coming to us, and all the memes and all the stuff that we are publishing, it's not something that I have initiated. It's just coming at us. They're memeing all over the place and sharing, and it's just very vital and invigorating to our movement, the way we're just able to draw in these young people. Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have a future, that's what you have to do. It's just the reality of it. And, I mean, personally, I'm not sure, in terms of Sweden at least, that the situation is going to be solved politically. It's just so bad demographically. But it doesn't mean, of course, that I'm negatively inclined towards people who are in political activism. I think we need to fight on every single level that we can, and there's nothing wrong with doing things politically. And I think some of the more negative voices out there would be, it's useless, it's no point, or whatever. But in terms of the demographic situation, it's obviously not as bad yet, I guess we should say, in Norway as it is in Sweden. It's a little bit better, it's a little bit more sensible. Maybe you wouldn't get that sense of it if you go to Oslo, but if you go out on the countryside and stuff like that, it's still fairly homogenous. Am I correct?
That is true. The situation here is much, much better than in Sweden. And there's still, I think, possible to close the borders and to fix this situation in Norway, to make sure that it doesn't get worse than it is now and start improving the situation within even a political solution. I share with you some of the concern limits of any kind of political solution as such, but I still believe that either way, the solution to these problems has to come from truthful and daring and brave individuals that are able to speak the truth. We have to start there. Regardless of what kind of solution that you imagine to the problems, you have to start with some people in your own society that are able to speak up. That needs to be a starting point either way.
Tell us a bit about how you see revitalizing nationalism to Norway and a proud Norwegian people once again. I mean, I think because of the history between Sweden and Norway, Norway has always been seen as much more patriotic than Sweden, of course. I mean, we have even, you know, parts of our cities on 17th of May, 17th of May, which is the Independence Day of Norway. Some of our streets are lit up with Norwegian flags, and you know, people are coming out, and there's trains and all kinds of stuff. And I always liked that. I never saw that as like, damn Norwegians or anything like that. I mean, I think much of our battles is of the past, and I think we're much better at a point where we can cooperate together as well. But what do you feel can be done there to bring back pride in Norway? The Norwegian people, the Norwegian history, etc. Is that a big aspect, and is that doable in your opinion?
Absolutely. And we are very fortunate in Norway because nationalism is alive and well in Norway still. It's fantastic. We have especially this, our Independence Day on the 17th of May, where everyone is out in the streets, all dressed up, waving Norwegian flags, singing national anthems, and numerous of them that everybody knows by heart. it really is a very fertile ground for nationalism that has never really been taken away the way it has been in many other countries, including Sweden and Germany and many others. So really, I think Norway is a country to look to for nationalists in all these countries to see some of this that's still alive and vibrant and strong. And really, we don't even need to rebuild a lot of things because they're actually there. We have to just make sure that it's politically acceptable to express it and make sure that it's not being suppressed and removed. So that is fantastic. I also believe that Norway is in a unique position when it comes to Norse history, the sagas, all the Viking stuff, all that. That's really something that we can build on to build a new, strong, positive, smiling nationalism, as we call it. And really, you know, we have to just take off from our shoulders the burden of nationalisms that have gone astray maybe in the past and just be proud and strong and build a new kind of modern nationalism with technology and with even, you know, the some of the aspects of the global communication that's inevitable, but without being put down by what's happened in the past. Nationalism is the natural way forward and the way in the natural way to organize societies. And in Norway, that idea is not alien. Everyone in Norway, I will say, that's a Norwegian will in their core spine understand what I'm talking about when I say that we need to make sure we look after Norway first and Norwegian interests first in a positive, smiling 17th of May nationalism, as I call it, because we all relate to this day. If we can do our nationalism in the same way that we celebrate our national day, then we're on a very good track to create something positive and good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the anti-nationalists, or if you want to call them the internationalists, or even the multiculturalists, I mean, their vision of the world is slowly crumbling. It's slowly coming to a grinding to a halt. If you check most of the migrant propaganda from like UN and stuff like that, or when YouTube does a, you know, more than a refugee campaign and stuff like that, I mean, I know that there's a tendency of maybe our crowd being on the web more and being more outspoken on the web and using that to their advantage more. But the downvotes votes on these things is just monumental. I mean, it's like 90-95% down on some of these videos and some of this propaganda. I think people are seeing through that. And my point is that their vision of the world is being proven in front of our eyes to be a failure. And I think we have to find a new way forward where we say, okay, this idea of taking foreign people from a different part of the world, distant land, whether that's the third or second world, moving them half across the world, placing them in countries such as Norway or Sweden or Germany or France or, you know, England, America even, is something that is very difficult to do. It's a pipe dream. It's not going to lead to anything good. There's segregation. People are turning into their own little enclaves. Then, of course, everyone on top of that is fighting with each other. Every interaction is now on a racial basis or an ethnic basis. It's causing the most fundamental basic aspects of our society, which we had in the past, to fall apart. And every movement that we make is a much more difficult one because everything is seen as some kind of power struggle or some kind of racist measurement or stuff like that, right? So I'm seeing that their vision is failing, but it's up to us to just come in with a pertinent solution where we say, all right, well, this was a mistake. We headed in the wrong direction. Let's restore the bad thing that happened here and let's move in the right direction where we once again start to advocate for every group to have their own nation, for their own territory, for them to live happily amongst themselves and be in a position where they can be surrounded by only their own people. Very few interactions at that point is going to be about racism or a power struggle or who are you or why did you say that, you know, all this bullshit that we're getting with multiculturalism right now. But you know, again, my point is just I think the solution is very, very simple. It doesn't mean, of course, that we can't impose or what I'm saying is I don't think that we can stop travel, as you said. We can't stop people from going to other parts of the world, and that's at least not what I'm advocating for either. But there needs to be some sensibility back into the picture when it comes to multiculturalism. But where do you stand on some of these issues?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of this is inevitable. Some of this will happen. I say that we need to limit immigration to a level where the immigrants are actually welcomed guests that we are able to accommodate and to treat as welcomed guests. You know, when there are too many, you're just not able to treat people as guests anymore. So that's because we, as Northern Europeans, are hospitable people. We, you know, we want to be hospitable to guests, and that's the way it should be. And I think that the movement online of new nationalists, that the kind of people are the vanguard. It has to be the vanguard of some kind of solution to this, whatever this solution is. And us just talking together, trying out new solutions, trying to innovate on democracy, to find solutions there, innovating on the internet in ways to communicate, how to put things, memeing, all that is fantastic. And I'm in touch now with nationalists and other proponents of these kind of ideas in other countries. We're helping out each other. And we have people coming into Norway now helping us out in the election now in August and September from other countries, from Italy, we have people, Sweden, people coming in. And that is just fantastic. What if we can help each other in the countries that we are having elections in and just have like a task force that's just moving from country to country? I have already said that I will be helping out people in Sweden for next year when you have the election in 2018. I happen to speak and write Swedish since I studied there. And I promise that I will help out what I can in your election next year. And then people are helping us now, and the year after that, we work on some other country and banding up to fight this craziness that's going on.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good idea. I mean, just basically have a core group of people that can come in as propagandists, right?
Yes.
And use that to their advantage and basically help to, you know, do information campaigns, promotional things, raise awareness about certain issues. And I think we can achieve that across national borders and, as you say, take those very core group of dedicated people and kind of move them into the right position at the right time to help. I mean, again, even if realistically, just look at the situation, we can't tip the scales I politically at this point. I do think that what you're bringing up here is very important because it's basically about getting people to, you know, start talking about the issues and addressing what really matters here and the elephant in the room, as it were, with mass migration. Why this happened, who was behind this, all this kind of stuff needs to be brought out into the focus and into the most forefront of people's consciousness and awareness, because this is what's going to ruin things, not only for them, but for their kids and for their grandkids. And if we can show them that this is what's happening, I think that they'll be in a better position to understand that, because they have, I mean, we have a media that's also operating against us constantly. We're the bad guys, we're the threat, we're the enemy, we're the ones who, you know, would cause violence or some bullshit like that, which is not true. But this is what they're trying to impose on us, basically to stop us in our tracks, to move forward with internationalism and globalism, and getting us into a point where we basically, as a people, cannot stand up and resist anymore, right?
Yes, and we talk to the young people directly. They are the hope. The young people today have access to all the information online, and they're finding their way to the information, and they're seeing that the establishment politicians are just lying about things. They're not presenting real solutions. So we have everything working really for us when it comes to the truth and bringing out the good, sound message to young people. We just have to mobilize on this and talk to them. I'm almost at the point where I don't talk to people my age and up anymore that more. I mean, they can listen to my videos and please do. But it's the young people where I see the hope. They are the ones we need to talk to. So when the people are coming to Norway now in August and September, I'm going to ask them to please go out to the campuses on the universities and the high schools and just talk to young people directly. And if we can do that in a systematic way, country by country, we can turn them around. I mean, unfortunately, it will take some time before they are into the positions in power that we need them to be. But even if it takes 10, 15, 20 years, that's we have to work on that.
There's
no other solution.
No,
we have to do that.
We have to do it, and we have to win over those young people that we have. Because, I mean, if we are in a situation where we demographically are being turned into minorities in our own country, I mean, we have to work as fast as we can, but we have to work with the population that we have and the people that we have. I don't know. I mean, in terms of the demographic situation in Norway, from a political point of view, have you gotten the sense that the reason why some of the politicians have advocated for mass migration and such is because they are usually politicians on the left, and they see this incoming force as a kind of a more left voting bloc or something like that? Or how do we explain that?
Somewhat. I don't think that phenomenon in Norway is that dominant that it might be in other countries like the UK or Sweden.
We've already been on the left in our countries, right? Mostly.
Yeah, so I think in Norway is a little bit of a special case. I think we also now have a vibrant discussion on immigration. It's going up and down according to the political climate that's raging at any time. So it is possible to direct this in Norway. It's not the total sort of political correctness that you have like in Sweden. So it's a different situation. But of course, they do benefit from this, and they do benefit from strengthening the system as it is. And they do not welcome any kind of innovation in the political system. They demand to have the right to push on to do just what they've been doing for a very long time into a situation that's just unsustainable without having the real questions being brought up in a structured way. They don't want that.
Interesting. So you said that maybe PC culture and stuff like that isn't as strong in Norway if you would compare to Sweden. It's a little bit more mellow, is that correct?
Or? Absolutely. It's more refreshing in Norway. You can bring up issues in Norway in a different way than Sweden. But still, you know, Sweden is the extreme example of everything right now, everything that's wrong. And everything that's wrong in Sweden is also wrong in Norway. We have the same thing, but it's just not as bad. And some of it, I think, also is... it's because we have a different history, and I think Norway actually can play an important role on the international scene and for other European countries. We were one of the last countries to be Christianed, you know, so it's also one of the last countries to really be turned into this political correctness that's just spreading like a virus now. And more of the old ways are still alive in Norway than they are, for example, in Sweden and Germany.
We should point out, though, that we do, of course, share a very common history. I mean, even the very name, right? Norway, it means the North Way. The old way of saying it was Norveger. It was actually the people who went north, right? It's the way to the north, which implies that it was a people that came from more from the south or southeast, even if you will, a little bit. But you know, for example, just for a fun history lesson here, the Ynglinga dynasty is, of course, kind of the root of Norway. One of the famous sagas, the Ynglinga sagas, of course, was preserved in Norway by Norwegians, but it was people that came from a royal dynasty that came from Sweden initially. So we have a common past, and same thing goes with Denmark, very tight-knit. I mean, they for a while, they were in control of southern Sweden for a long time, actually. Or even before it was Denmark, I guess we should say. But we had many different tribes. It was Geats, and it was Swedes, and it was, you know, Rugi up in Norway, and all kinds of different tribes that slowly began to merge into separate groups over time. But there is a common bond. What do you think of a cross Nordic kind of alliance in the future? Is that any possibility? I heard, for example, that if Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and I don't know if Finland was included in that, but I know Iceland was. They were talking about that as a economic zone, and I think we would be developing into one of the strongest economies in Europe if we made that alliance. I don't know if Norway would be interested in that. I don't know who would want to take Sweden, by the way, with all the migrants and stuff, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm a big history buff, and I believe the history is one of the most important things to bring up in order to find solutions to this. So we have to look back in order to be able to look forward. I think it's a strength that in Scandinavia we are these different countries, and it's something that we should build on. I'm not sure that we should try to melt these countries together. I'm really a fan of thinking that we need to distribute power as much as possible. And even though the Norwegians and the Swedes are very close and very similar, we are still different people looking for different kinds of solutions. We have a different history. So I believe it's a good thing that we are these different countries. And I would rather see that we split up in Europe into more countries like it was in the Middle Ages and further back, like both Norway and Sweden was originally split up into kingdoms and smaller units. And the smaller units are, the better it is, I think, really, to fight the madness of globalism and immigration and state finances going amok. You just don't do that to the guy living next door to you, but you can do those kind of things in an abstract level. And the evil forces of the world, they want this abstraction to go on and on and on, because then you can do all kinds of crazy things that you just wouldn't be able to do with people that you have to look in the eyes on a daily basis.
You know, I agree with you fundamentally. I think that very important aspect to that we not only preserve these very distinct differences that we already have, and of course, over time, we have developed, you know, nuances in culture and language and all that stuff. And I don't want to see any of that go away. Certainly not. I want to make sure that we preserve those. I want to make sure that we're in a position where we do observe. I mean, even nationalization itself was a great harm to the diversity of cultures that we had. I think at this point, what I feel is like, okay, well, at this point we have the nation. Let's stop here. It's good here. We don't have to, you know, ruin that. We don't have to necessarily break that up either. It is what it is. But for example, I mean, I remember after the 40s, much of this happened after the Second World War, of course. But in the 40s, we had, for example, and I know that Norway went through a similar thing with a language reform where, you know, different groups have very different set of not only dialects. I mean, in some cases, they could almost been classified as their own languages. And we went through this process of what they call the Rikssvenska, which is like, I guess, Reichs Swedish, or like the Kingdom Swedish, or, you know, whatever you want to call that. Nationalization, basically, of the language, right? To kind of conform it. And some of the kids that went to school, they were punished if they used, you know, the words of their group at that time, or the dialects of them, that they try to get that out of the picture. And, you know, just language as a mental kind of framework for you being a separate and unique identity is very important. So I feel that the destruction of those things, Hans, was very detrimental. And many of those differences that we've had throughout time been eroded away. And it hasn't been natural either. It's imposed from top down decisions by politicians and centralization and stuff like that. So I agree with you on that point. I want to see those preserved. However, my only point of not disagreement really, but my point of realization would be, how can we, as those small individual units and sets of dots on the map, work against Islamification of Europe, or work against China as an economy? Or do you see what I'm getting at? That we have these huge organization working against us, and it seems that the wheel of history so far, in a way, has always been in the direction of bigger conglomerates and unifications and groups going together to leverage more power and domination, both economically but also politically and influentially. How does Norway, as a small country, operate against an ideology like Islam with billions of people within it, or China with billions of people, right?
Well, you're addressing the big issues, of course, and there might be solutions to this that we cannot quite see yet, but the solutions that I'm working on and the framework that I believe we need to work on is to look at the nation states as they are today in Europe and go back to their founding documents and their early days, because a lot of this destructive forces have really gone astray in postmodernism since the Second World War. But we do have the ability to go back before the Second World War and back to the 19th century and find sensible documents, sensible arrangements, even the laws and a lot of the structure that we are still living in is formed in more sensible times. So we have this ability to pick up on that and to reverse some of the things that's been going on in our modernity. So that's at least the solution that I believe that we need to work on as the first option, the first way and the first things that we need to try. If that doesn't work out, then maybe simultaneously we also need to work on different solutions. I'm a huge believer myself in digital solutions, that we can do things on the blockchain, we can do work with Bitcoin and digital currencies, we can look at how Wikipedia has been able to set up structures that are working much better than the state-controlled solutions that we had in the past. So maybe we can run our entire society on those kind of digital solutions. That's like a sidetrack to this, but all of that needs somehow to be merged. I'm not willing to give up on the nation states and going back to our grandfathers and great-grandfathers and great-great-grandfathers and pick up those ideas and refresh them and revitalize them. And in the same time as we revitalize their sense of art and architecture and beauty and poetry and all that, I imagine a new age with those kind of revitalized thoughts merged with technology, and then we find solutions to the immigration problem. We send most of the immigrants that have recently arrived back again in a humane way, and that there is a bright future ahead for us.
You know what? I really like that. I want to talk more about that in the second segment. I want to get your take on some of the applications of those solutions. I've been thinking about this too. Is there other structures legally that we can do to preserve pockets of people? What about the kind of the ideas of virtual nations? Maybe there's unifications that can occur in different ways than on the, just at this point anyway, the territory level. There's other things here that is involved, and I agree with those, and I think that that's an interesting thing. So let's pick up that and talk more about that in a second. But before we take a break here, we of course have the election, as you say, September 11th looming.
9/11,
exactly. What's the outcome? What are you hoping for realistically? How is this going to all turn out, if you're honest about this?
It's very difficult to have that question. What is the realistic outcome? Because as the runner, as the leader of a political party, I have to say that I believe that we will get into parliament with lots of seats.
Of course, you're going to win. You're going to win. You're going to get millions of votes. Right? I mean, yeah.
I have to say that.
Yeah,
there's
of course.
No other way.
You have to believe in it, man.
That's what I can say about that. I have to say that. But the thing is with the alliance that we already have these huge wins. We are having all these young people come to us, and we're connecting them. So we have created a team now of young people that are memeing the other parties are just memed to oblivion when it comes to online discussions in certain forums. And we've created something very valuable that will go on after the election, regardless of how we actually worked out the election itself. It's looking good for us. We will have a large amount of votes, and that will give us financial support from the government, because in Norway it works so that every vote you get about the party will get about something like $100 to the parties. Every vote really counts a lot. So if there's something I can ask about to the international community, it would be to try to, you know, see what you can do to give the Norwegian, the alliance votes by maybe, if you do a podcast, do a segment about Norway. You know, if you have a film or something on YouTube and you're running ads for it, try to target the Norwegian audience to see if you can push the message to Norway. Red pill young people, they come to us. We build this new tremendous community, and the government will feed us some money to build that community. And the community is really the most important thing that comes out of the alliance, even though, you know, we might get seats in the on the parliament and all that. The community, all these people in Norway that tell me every day now, I thought I was the only one. I was alone. I was searching out online. I never seen anyone else in Norway speak for me and speak the kind of ideas I've been thinking. And now we're connecting them, hundreds of them, literally hundreds of people in forums and talking to each other. It's just that will go on regardless of how the election goes on 9/11.
All right, very good. Well, you know, it's good. Make Norway great again memes are going to save Norway. We have to be positive, though. I mean, I definitely agree with that. We have to have a good sense of things, and we can't just be downtrodden and like, oh, it's over, we're going to lose. And what is that going to give us? You're not going to get us anywhere, you know?
We have so much fun. You know, it's so much fun doing this. And I feel that, you know, I personally have so much fun. I'm laughing every morning. I see the new memes. You know, that's just every day there are memes coming in. And I'm just laughing so hard and so much, and good energies are just bouncing around the forums and the chats that we have. So it's tremendous fun. And that's also one of the big insights of the Alliance and how we set it up so that every candidate is fully at liberty to push their own agenda as they please, is that there's a tremendous respect for each other. So it's not like the candidates are grinding each other down. But even differences are accepted and encouraged and even laughed at and, you know, patting each other on the back. Hey, that was really cool. It's not how I would frame that issue. Maybe it's right on the opposite way of how I would frame it. But what a cool way that you have been able to meme this or frame this or whatever. And it's just this positive energies. The lines are holding and we're backing each other. So it's a tremendously positive experience, the whole thing. Even though we're attacked by the left and they can be vicious and they can be nasty and everything that you can imagine. But me as the leader, I'm taking most of the flack for the candidates for being like the front, and I can take it. So, you know, that's like a personal thing, I guess. I don't get discouraged by all the flack and the criticism. And everyone else is just encouraging each other, and it creates a good dynamic.
All right, very good. We're going to, of course, take a break here in a little bit. But before we do that, I want to give out the website. And also, just a quick note, I want to check out the painting behind you there. This is, of course, a famous Swedish painting. Is it Kung Anund? Is it the, what's the, I can't believe I'm forgetting the painter's name now. Larsson? What is it, Larsson?
It's a very famous Swedish painting, Carl Larsson.
Carl Larsson, that's right, of course.
Midwinter Blot.
Yes.
It's a Norse pagan, very much traditional pagan ceremonial illustration and painting.
And it's about, of course, it's been one of the most debated paintings in Swedish history. And it is, of course, about a sacrifice by the king. It's about basically a symbolic act. I think it was, I don't know if it was King Anund or who it was. I forget who the king was, but it's one of the ones mentions in the sagas. And of course, he sacrifices himself to the gods as a symbolic act to say, you know, the nation, the people, their well-being it goes in front of my own, right? I'm giving myself as a gift in my life to them, to the greater force in the universe and the gods, so that the people will prosper and be in a better situation. It's an important lesson of something that we need at these times with leadership, right?
I think so.
All right, give us the website before we go here. Is it stemalliansen.no, is that correct?
That is right, stemalliansen. You really need to just click the link. I won't spell it out in English, but it's stemalliansen. Just Google us for the Alliance in Norway. You'll probably find us most easily by just Googling us. And most of the work we do are on the social media platforms. And we do a lot of video work. It's been working tremendously well for us. So we've been teaching, you know, and training all our candidates on producing video. And we have now daily multiple videos coming out from many of the candidates. And they're just encouraging each other. So it's a tremendous way to reach out with just video. I encourage people to do video more than I encourage people to write op-eds and all that. Video is just
it works.
Tremendous.
Yep, works the best. All right, awesome. We'll have a link up, guys, so you can click through easily from our pages, YouTube or Red Eyes TV or RedEyesMembers.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Much more ahead with Hans. Thank you for joining us for the first segment. We have the second one coming up here right after a short break. A great second segment, second part, frankly. Very positive show. a lot of different creative ways to reach new people. Hans has a lot of ideas. We're going to try also to cooperate in the future to help get the word out about Norway's election. We're going to make a video and a request, basically, that more people out there help to pull in the same direction. Utilize the troll armies, as it were, to have Norwegian mainstream media possibly covering an issue that, you know, identitarian groups in Europe or alt-right groups in America are focusing on Norway and the Norwegian election. And it could actually aid to get the word out about certain issues that's going to be important in the election, of course. So that's some of the stuff we're working on in the background of all of this. But we'll get into some of those, you know, positive aspects in the second part. We also talk a bit more about, you know, tradition and basically how to have a more positive message to people, what we need to do and what kind of material that we need to discuss and promote to make sure that people are welcomed and feel that it's something positive and giving, almost nurturing to a certain extent, as opposed to something which is very black-pilled and kind of off-putting, basically. So a lot of good stuff in the second segment. So I do hope that you join us in the members section. RedIceMembers.com is the website where you can go to sign up for a membership with us. Definitely make sure that you do support us. We are expanding. We are bringing in more people. We're trying to do more coverage. We're also getting a new, larger studio space here at some point. A lot of things brewing behind the scenes right now. We have achieved a tremendous amount with the small team that we have at our disposal. Imagine what we could do if we had 5, 10, 15 more people. Who knows where we could be today? Well, I know because I have the ideas, and I know that we would simply explode in our coverage and the things that we'd be able to do, the things we'd be able to cover, and we would just reach so many more new people in that endeavor. Come aboard. Help us out. This is an essential time as we're reaching more people than ever. We're also updating the members' website right now, a much-needed experience. There's so many things we're working on in the background of everything. It's just amazing what we can achieve if we put our minds and hearts to it. We work like no one else. We are in this day and night. This is the only thing that we do. We are in this because this is an existential question. We believe in this fight and this struggle. It's ultimately about our survival. And you're not going to find any more dedicated people than those we have on our team. And we need to find more of those people to help get the word out, to help bring in new people into the fold as well. So anyway, head on over to RedIceMembers.com right now, our members website. We have subscriptions from 3 months up to 2 years available, whatever works for you. We also have a 3-month recurring subscription option, which is really the best way to help us out, make sure that you sustain your membership. But it's only €6 per month, you know, so it's like nothing. It's basically like a fancy cup of coffee in some of these hipster joints that they have in America these days. So not much, and it means a tremendous amount to us. You wouldn't believe if only 10% of you guys who are watching right now signed up. It would mean an incredible amount to us in terms of the resources that we would get from that. We would employ more people almost immediately. We would basically expand our studio space. We would be in a much better situation, but it is up to you guys to support us. And I will keep hammering this because this is the only way that we can fund the operation. We don't have ads, we don't have commercials, we don't have big sponsors. It's really up to you guys to ensure that we can continue with this and grow. So thank you so much for your support. Second hour with Hans is coming right up. Great show, definitely tune in. In the meantime, just want to let you know that we are going to take a couple of weeks off from the live TV show. We're restructuring a couple of things behind the scenes. We're basically going to bring in a couple of more people into the fold. I need help with the production itself because I want to bring you guys a better show and a better experience. So we'll be off for probably 2, maybe 3 weeks. We'll keep you guys updated on the websites, of course. The radio show, maybe just a few shows here and there will take off, but we'll continue to bring you, at the very least, an audio version of the show. However, in the meantime, we're going to bring you some other video material and content as well. We have several reports. We have new exclusive and unique videos we want to bring you guys. So although we won't do the live TV show for a little bit, we have tons of other segments and reports we want to bring you guys. So definitely stay tuned to our YouTube channel and, of course, the website redice.tv and redicemembers.com for more material. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for your support.
bright anger's ferocious fright. All that gentle, that good old, I see my reflection in your eyes.